Welcome back to the podcast. This week we're joined by Helen Hooker, who comes to talk to us about a relatively newfound love of all things pinhole. And thank you to all the listeners who sent in questions. Hello and welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show 118. And I'm recording this right at the end of May. So we're welcoming the British springtime. And if it's winter where you are, then commiserations. I can't take the mickey out of Corey because he's not here. It's a weekday. It's a Monday. So it's just me and our guest. And I'm pleased to say we're joined today by Helen Hooker. How are you doing, Helen?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, bearing up. Yes, that's all I can say. in the middle of jobs, I quit one job and I'll be starting another one in about a month's time if all the references say nice things about me.
It's exciting.
Well, it is, yeah. So I'm not sure whether Corey realizes because he spent show after show talking about semi-retirement and neck tattoos and all sorts of things. But anyway, so Corey's working because it's a weekday. And so it's just me and you. Now, normally, Helen, we'd ask you to tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into pinhole photography. But last night, as I was nodding off, I think, I decided to post something into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group saying mm-hmm. that you and I were going to be speaking today. And if you have the odd question... and then I kind of insulted everybody by saying it. And quite frankly, you all suck at this. Then post them here and surprise me. Well, they did. Fancy that. Maybe I should insult the listeners more often. And
a new strategy for the Lensless Podcast.
Well, I sometimes the guests get a little bit. Well, I hope they don't get too insulted, but sometimes my humour can be a bit weird. So we won't ask you to introduce yourself because I think if I work out these questions properly, they might lead us down into some of this sort of background info. So, which one was it? Yes, this one. Julianne Piper says, why pinhole? Do you exclusively shoot pinhole or some lensed cameras? Do you build cameras yourself? Well, that's a sort of good introductory question. So why pinhole?
That's a good question, actually. I was thinking earlier about how I first got interested in pinhole, and I think it dates back to a camera club evening we had where one of our club members brought his digital camera along, and we sort of created homemade pinholes to go on them. And that, I think that sort of intrigued me. And then from there, at some point, I discovered Ondu cameras, read about them online, and liked the idea of exploring pinhole photography a bit further. So I got my first pinhole camera and quickly got addicted. In terms of why pinhole, I like the look of the images, sort of the slightly dreamy images, and the fact that it's just a different way of looking at photography, really. You can sort of see the travel of time much more through pinhole photos than you perhaps do digital, and I like exploring that.
But so, what about your wider photographic background?
I had a camera when I was a child. I think I got my first camera when I was about 10, little Ricoh 35mm, which I shot with for years, and then I suppose when I left university, I didn't. Do much in the way of photography, but it was really the advent of digital. I quite like the idea of a digital camera and the fact that you could see the pictures immediately. So my other half bought me a digital camera back in 2004, just a little point and shoot. And I used that for a while and realised I could learn much more quickly because of the instant feedback, and just sort of carried on from there. I did a photo a day project for 10 years with my digital cameras. It was supposed to be a year and I got hooked and just kept going. And I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I found my original film camera again and thought I'd give that a try. But the meter in it had long since died. So I bought myself another little Ricoh to shoot with. and gradually got back into pinhole into film photography again that way. And
you love the idea of the instant feedback and a photo a day. But you get none of that really, do you, with the pinhole photography? Well, I suppose you could use pinhole like a digital camera. I guess if you're quick at developing and quick at posting.
you could do. No, I mean, it originally actually film photography was one of the reasons why eventually I stopped doing the photo a day thing with my digital photography. Excuse me. Was because the having to take and share a photo every day meant actually fitting that in with film photography was much harder, because obviously I wasn't able to, at that point I wasn't developing my own film. So I couldn't get film photos turned around that quickly. Yeah. And I found that was actually having the pressure to do a photo every day was actually stopping me getting back into film photography a bit more. So actually stopping that in 2018 was gave me a good opportunity to slow things down and get into film a bit more and start doing more pinhole photography.
So your Instagram site for pinhole, I know you have another one, but your Instagram one for pinhole is HH Pinhole, which is very well followed. And you have a hashtag there of Daily Pinhole Project. So how's that going for you?
Well, that started the beginning of 2021 when we'd just gone back into yet another COVID lockdown here.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I decided I was going to do some pinhole photography every day. I realised I probably wasn't going to keep that up every single day for a whole year. So my original plan was to take a fresh pinhole photo, or at least one pinhole photo every day during the month of January. And then I shared them on my pinhole account as I was able to get the films developed. And since then, I've just carried on shooting. I'm not shooting every single day, but I've carried on. I'm shooting pinhole photos often enough that I'm able to put a fresh photo up every day, even if it was taken a week, 2 weeks beforehand.
So then it becomes, I mean, flicking through your HH Pinhole Instagram site, it is almost like it reads like a sort of visual diary. I mean, most recently there's some Tower Bridge photographs and some architecture, which I know is another passion of yours. We'll talk about that in a moment. Mm-hmm. And there's some hotel-y type pictures, which I'm very familiar with, and a car picture, and then some gorgeous colour pictures, which I saw the other week when you shared those, or maybe it was more recent than that. Colour pictures from a church somewhere. And
yes,
yeah, so these are just your meanderings, aren't they, really, I suppose?
They are.
When you did one of your recorder concerts, you shared those as well. So yeah, you are using it a bit like a diary.
I am, really. I mean, I guess old habits die hard, really. I mean, I think with the digital photo a day, it became a question of I always had a camera with me, so I was always on the lookout for a photo, and that habit's still there with me to a degree. And I do a lot of traveling for my work, so I use that as a means to get out and about with my pinhole camera as well.
I mean, I used to do a lot of traveling, not every single day, but enough that you were in unfamiliar places. And for some people and me at the time, it's a great inspiration to be in different places. And
absolutely,
because it's often a struggle in your own environment. I mean, we can have that discussion, but it is often a struggle, even when people says, "Oh, well, you've got to look for the beauty in the familiar." Well, yeah, we know that, but it's still a struggle.
Yes, it's always good to have fresh things to inspire you, isn't it?
Your day job, mostly, I guess, is a peripatetic musician, is that right? Peripatetic, for those uneducated listeners, means someone who travels around.
Indeed, yes. So I'm a professional recorder player, so I do a mixture of teaching, conducting ensembles, I do some performing, so it takes me all over the place. Within the last couple of weeks, I've been to Sussex, Somerset, Yorkshire, Peterborough at the weekend, so I get around a bit.
Well, you weren't far from me then at the weekend.
No. gives me plenty of opportunities.
We've had this discussion before. The recorder has got a bit of a bad reputation, hasn't it, really?
So
why recorder? And redeem its qualities for us.
Yes, it's one of those instruments that for many, many years, it was the instrument the children started off on in schools. And initially, as with any beginner musician, they play badly. And that's the image or the sound image, as it were, people have in their minds when they think of the recorder, you know, little children squeaking away on the desktop recorder.
Mm.
But it's a much bigger family of instruments. I mean, I took up recorder at school, the same as many other kids. It was compulsory at my primary school. And I took it up with the rest of my class, but I found I had some aptitude for it and I really enjoyed playing it. And I took up clarinet as well for a while, but recorder was definitely my main instrument, the thing I was best at. And I enjoy the sort of music that I get to play. There's a huge variety of music. And it sort of carried on from there. I think the big thing for me was when I was about 16, I went on a summer school for recorder players. And we had 150 recorder players there playing everything from the tiny sopranino, which is about 6 inches long, to a contrabass, which is about 6 feet long.
So 150 recorder players, presumably competent ones.
Mostly. Mostly. I mean, there were some less experienced ones there, but it was a good standard. And put it this way, I was so excited by the sound of 150 recorder players, particularly the large recorders. I actually sent my mum and dad a postcard. Bear in mind, this was 1987, so I couldn't send them a text or an email. How do you get into
teaching and conducting and all that sort of stuff?
Well, when I left music college, it's difficult as a recorder player to sort of know where you go from there, because you can't get a job with a big symphony orchestra.
Are there big orchestras that include recorders? I mean, you don't see them like the real Royal Philharmonic.
No,
have a recorder section, does it?
You get the occasional.
I'm not being flippant.
No, not at all. There are quite a few baroque orchestras that will occasionally use recorders, and there are possibilities for doing solo and chamber music concerts, but it's not going to be enough to earn you a living.
No.
So I went into teaching. I thought, well, I can teach the instrument. I'd already done a little bit. And gradually that sort of changed into doing more coaching on courses. And I'm actually a director now of the summer school I went to when I was a teenager. And there you're dealing with larger groups of players, so you find you have to conduct them. And it's sort of gone from there. And actually conducting is probably what I do 75% of the time. That's probably a good majority of my job now.
So does that mean you're like a guest conductor of different orchestras? Conductors with orchestras, in my sort of simple understanding of things, like Simon Rattle was a conductor for a long time, wasn't he, at Birmingham Symphony
Orchestra?
That's right,
yes.
And then I think he moved to Germany, maybe, and then I think he came back. So they tend to stay with a city orchestra for a time. How does that work with...
Well, for my work, it's sort of a mixture. I've got three recorder orchestras that I conduct regularly.
Okay.
One of which is actually what we call an 8-foot recorder orchestra. So the smallest recorder is the tenor, the 2 foot long, down to the really big ones. That's a really lovely mellow sound. So I've got those that I conduct regularly, and then I do sort of guest sessions with recorder groups and recorder orchestras around the country. The Society of Recorder Players has groups all around the country, and I go and visit them quite often.
Mm-hmm. Well, sounds like you're doing a sterling job. And, of course, it gives you lots of opportunities to, as we've touched upon, visit different places. But I saw recently you'd been photographing using your pinhole camera and orchestra, which you shared some of those pictures into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, and I think some of them are on Instagram. Is that the first time you'd done that, or had you done that before?
That's the first time I've done a series of photos. I mean, on that particular occasion, it was Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day.
Right.
And I was conducting, it was actually the Society of Recorder Players National Festival in Ipswich this year. And I was determined I wasn't going to miss out on my pinhole fix for that day. So I combined the two. So we had about 100, 150 recorder players there that I photographed playing together en masse.
Very effective. Did they? Did you get queer looks?
I did explain to them beforehand what I was going to be doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a lot of these events, I end up being the sort of official photographer anyway, taking digital photos. So yeah. They're used to seeing me about with the camera. So I just warned them in advance, look, I'm going to be walking around with a little wooden box on a tripod. I haven't gone completely bonkers. this is photography and you'll be able to see the photos later. And they were, I think some of them were quite excited by that sort of prospect of something a bit different.
Okay. So Julianne says, mentions about lensed cameras. Now I know you use lensed cameras because it's on your website, which is, forget the website address, but we'll pick up on that later. But architecture is a great love of yours. And I think when I saw you recently, you'd just come from Ely Cathedral, where you'd been leading a workshop in architectural photography.
Yes, that was actually that came about via a friend at our local camera club. His brother wanted to learn a bit more about doing architecture photography. So we went out for the day, just the three of us, and did some photography in Ely. And that is something I do quite a lot of with my digital cameras, and to a degree with my pinhole as well.
Well, you've shared some beautiful churches. I mean, you've got this project, I guess it's still ongoing, of photographing all the churches in London. Is that still going?
Yes, it's sort of slightly dormant at the moment. The last one I did was February 2020. And we know how the rest of 2020 ended. But the churches are open again now. So I'm hoping as I get a bit more time over the summer to get back and fill in the ones I've missed so far.
And how do you find your approach to church pinhole photography differs from lensed photography in churches?
It's much slower, certainly.
Really? and you avoid foma pan, presumably.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. yes, choice of film becomes quite an important decision when you're shooting indoors with a pinhole camera. But actually, it's in some ways, it's not so different, because when I'm using a lens camera, I tend to use prime lenses anyway. I've always, in recent years, enjoyed using primes more than zoom lenses. So I'm used to thinking in sort of one focal length, if you like.
Yeah.
But it's just with pinhole, it tends to all be wide angle. So you have to get in much closer if you want details. But I tend to still think in the same way. So I'll go for some wide shots, taking in the whole church and taking in the architectural lines. And then I'll look for smaller details that I can get up close to and feature.
Yeah, I suppose that's the benefit of pinhole. One of the many benefits, of course, is that you can get pretty much on top of a piece of detail. And many of these cameras, certainly, I haven't really used the Ondu, but certainly the Reality, so Satellite, I do have experience with, and Todd Schlemmer's Terrapin camera.
Oh,
they seem to be bitingly sharp, right close to something, especially something shiny. You put something shiny and pointy,
yes,
then it renders it really, really sharp.
Yes.
So I know you do. You do put your Ondu right close to little bits of architectural detail, don't you?
Yes. I mean, there was the colour pictures you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they're great.
Coggeshall Church. I mean, they were sort of interesting animals and carvings on the pews in the choir. Yeah. And for some of them, my camera was, I don't know, 4 inches away from them, and they still don't look enormous in the frame.
No, the picture of the bird on the end of the choir, probably choir stands.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like a stork or something. I don't know what it is, something with a long beak anyway.
Yes.
you need to get closer. But you said, but you probably were pretty close, weren't you?
I was, yes. It still amazes me just how wide angle these cameras are.
I don't think you do need to be closer, actually, because you're setting the bird in the context of the choir seat.
Indeed.
And I think it's great. There's one there. It might even be a dodo. Yeah, it could be a dodo, I think it's a dodo, isn't it?
I wondered about that, yes.
Yeah, it's got that weird curved beak and it looks a bit stupid, so it's probably a dodo. and then you've got this wonderful old faded red seat moving away from it. and it just sort of, you know, the dodo is nice and sharp and everything just gradually falls away a little bit, which is wonderful. And what have you got a favorite color film?
I think it's probably Kodak Ektar. I mean, on that day, I was using Lomography 400, which I'd never used before.
Oh, well, it works really well, doesn't it? I might use it in pinhole, so that's very encouraging.
Yeah.
I've got some of that in the fridge.
I think I basically metered as for Portra 400. I think that was the metering I used in the app I use.
Oh, is it not on the, no, not in the pinhole?
Sadly not. Yeah. But that seemed to work fine. But yeah, Ektar, okay. I think, is my favourite colour film.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose indoors those extra two stops helps a bit, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so they're great. And you're sending your colour film off to be developed somewhere, aren't you? I forget where you're sending it to.
Yeah. In Birmingham.
Oh, there we go. Well, they seem to do a good job for you.
Yeah, very good. And phenomenally quick as well. Never fails to amaze me how fast my pictures return to me.
Yeah, I'm just browsing down through your music ones now. They're great, aren't they? And of course, you're getting a little bit of movement and the folks are sitting still, so you're getting that sort of combination of stationary and movement.
Yes.
So on the subject of music, have we got finished with Julian's questions? Oh, do you build cameras yourself? Now, it occurred to me, I think I know the answer to this, but it occurred to me that your instrument has lots of holes in it. Have you ever thought about in one of the bigger, because these recorders come in all, take one of the bigger ones and shoving some paper down it, you know, in the dark, and then using it as a pinhole camera.
Yes, I haven't tried that, I have to confess, but perhaps I should.
So what's the biggest camera that would offer you a can you get something with a focal length of, you know, an inch or two? 25 millimeters. You must be able to. There must be a recorder. Yeah, an inch to 2 inches.
Yes, yes. You could use you could use a contrabass. That would. I mean, they're about.
But the holes are quite big, though. The holes are going to be too big, aren't they?
Yes, you'd need to cover them up. Actually, in actual fact, the contrabass I've got is square and made of plywood, so that actually wouldn't quite work. But
well, you could make a series of smaller pinholes around about, you know, 0.2 of a millimeter using a little drill or a pin on some very thin brass, and then you could just gaffer tape them over your recorder over several holes. Okay, you are using the holes, but you are actually putting a proper pinhole in them. So there's a project for you. I'll just leave that one. Leave that one with you. So
I'll ponder of that one.
Your next challenge. So have you built any pinhole cameras yet?
No, I haven't. I quite like the idea of doing it, but so far I've just used the ones that I've bought ready made.
Yeah, it's not everyone's idea of fun building pinhole cameras. Other people just, that's all they like doing, you know. So it's there's room for everybody.
Indeed.
Absolutely. So moving on. Yeah, Alex Purcell, friend of the show, and been on a couple of times, and also co-host of the Soot and Whitewash podcast.
Ah, of course, yes.
Well, they claim to be hosts of the Soot and Whitewash podcast, but I don't think they've put one out in a while.
I've not heard one for a little while, no.
Alex and Neil, you need to get your respective fingers out. Okay, hello, Andrew and Helen. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Well, let's hope we don't disappoint you, Alex. Has music been a source of inspiration for your photography? If so, who and what?
I was thinking about this one earlier, and the actual music. Yeah, I often find myself photographing musicians in action. Occasionally pinhole, more often with digital. But I guess in terms of what I shoot, perhaps that's influenced it more, because over the years I spent a lot of time sitting in churches, playing in concerts, and inevitably there's lots of rests. You sit there counting rests and looking around yourself at the architecture. And I think that's probably why I'm so drawn to churches for photography. And certainly that's, you know, I do that in my pinhole photography.
I don't know whether Alex is getting at particular pieces of music you might be, you know, listening to at home? I mean, I'm just trying to think. Is it Billy Sanford? Do you know? Do you listen to the? I'm going to cock this up completely because my podcast listening is pretty poor. I think it's Billy Sanford who started a spin-off podcast. I'm going to either with the Sunny 16 or with Negative Positives, talking about music and photography.
Ah, I've not listened to that one.
No, and I've probably just messed it up completely. So if it's it may not even be Billy. Anyway, someone, I think it's him, has started a regular or semi-regular, and it could be part of the Sunny 16 empire of podcasts. I'm remiss in not having listened yet, but it sounds really intriguing because, you know, there's podcasts and there's podcasts, and one that tries to link music and photography, you know, I think is really kind of interesting.
It's funny. Well, I've aside from the occasions where I find myself taking photos of other musicians, my music and photography have tended to be fairly separate. Because the danger with as a musician is you find your job and your hobby become one and the same thing. And one of the reasons I started to get back into photography was the fact that it gave me a hobby that wasn't work. It was something completely separate. There's not, aside from taking photos of musicians, there's not been an awful lot of overlap between the two.
Yeah. I mean, some people will talk about listening to particular pieces of music and being inspired to go out. I mean, I don't know. What could you... There's a lot of classical pieces out there. I say a lot. There are some classical pieces out there where you can hear bird song, not real bird song, but the instruments mimic, don't they? You can probably tell me what those pieces are, but there are some, and you know, and so you could imagine someone sitting there listening to that, thinking, well, I just need to go out and put myself in nature to try and, you know, and emulate this piece of music. I'm probably being far too arty farty about it. At the end of the day, do what you need to do to make nice pictures.
Yes,
and I know
I was going to say, I know some people listen to music while they're out doing photography.
Well, yes, that's true. Yeah,
but I have to confess, that's not something I do, because the problem is I get so caught up in the music and I find myself analysing it and contemplating how the composer did this, that, the other. It distracts me from the photography, so I tend to keep it separate.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, some of those church images, if you're doing I don't know what how long you're standing still for, but it can be. My experience with church photography is that I normally turn up at one with completely the wrong film in the camera because I haven't planned to be there. And then I'm standing around for about half an hour.
Yes, I've been known to do that.
Yeah, so plenty of time to plug yourself in, isn't there?
And, well, there is that, yes.
And listen. Okay, all right. I've now lost the questions as I was desperately searching for that podcast that Billy may or may not have started. Okay, so Alex, apparently not. No. Helen's a musician, but it's not a source of inspiration.
Sorry.
So thanks for asking that. So let's start at the top. I think they were the two sort of intro. I think you've probably answered this, but I'll ask it anyway. Jimmy Hickford asks at least one sensible question. What are Helen's favourite places and subjects to take pinhole photos of?
Well, obviously, we've talked about architecture and churches and what have you. One thing I've particularly enjoyed recently is sort of doing more sort of city photography. Yeah. And I've been into London several times to do that. And actually, the other thing I did earlier in the year, I went on a photography workshop down in Dorset and did lots of seaside pinhole photography, which was great. I did miss being near the sea because I used to live on the south coast. So I grab every opportunity I can to get back to the seaside. It's always nice to capture the movement.
It is. And you've got lots of people doing it. I mean, Will Gudgeon does a lot down by the sea, doesn't he? And it becomes, you know, if you base yourself in that sort of area, your pictures start taking on a signature and a look. And I think, and you've got all the movement of the water, and you've got things that poke out into the sea that don't move. So yes. It's a lot, and boats, of course, and chains, and wow, lots of stuff. Yeah, I miss the seaside too. You know, I was born and brought up by the coast, but not anymore.
Yes.
So are you? So city. I think city. The use of pinhole in cities is fascinating, and I love those images which capture the busyness of cities. Mm. I don't know if you're drawn to that sort of images. I was in London a while ago, and I don't know what happened to these negatives. Maybe I just messed them up and they've not seen the light of day. I can't actually remember. But I remember putting my pinhole camera, it's probably the reality so subtle, on top of the, you know, the little, when you're crossing the button thing that you press where it says walk and don't walk. Whatever that, what are they called? Whatever that box is called that you press the button that says stop and walk.
That's I'm sure it has a name.
And it was busy. You know, like London is, and it was a busy crossroads, and I stuck my pinhole camera on that and stood next to it just in case someone, you know, thought it was something to pinch. And as people were crossing, I opened the lens up, and I think it was just a few seconds, so I'd have had 100 speed film or something in, and that seemed to me, you know, a great use of pinhole photography. But I clearly didn't do it very well, because I don't think I've ever seen the negative. Does that sort of thing appeal to you, capturing movement?
It does. Yes, very much so. I've done a little bit of that. Actually, when I was in London earlier this month, I was travelling back from London Bridge back up on. I decided to be lazy and get the bus. So I went up to the back of the top deck on the bus and set up my tripod there and got some sort of movement in the passengers who were in front of me. Most of them were slightly inebriated tourists.
I can see that picture.
I'm sure they thought I was completely crackers, but it was good to experiment with it and see how it worked.
Yeah, you don't see many pictures from the back of a London bus. This one, yeah. I think there's probably some, I can't work out whether there's actually at some point some movement down the gangway. There's some sort of odd shape. Might just be reflections on the roof. Sometimes it's hard to see. But that's worked really well. So you should, there's like a whole little series of pictures from buses, you know?
Indeed. I have tried it on trains as well. When I've been travelling, I've sometimes taken a pinhole camera with me when I've been going for a rehearsal somewhere. Yep. And sort of documented my day. I managed one shot at Liverpool Street Station a few months back. I managed a 4-minute exposure without the security coming and chasing me off, which was quite nice. So you could see the movement of passengers on the concourse.
Yeah, I think if you're careful and you place it somewhere, particularly if you're sort of standing next to it, and you could probably stand your bag next to it or something, security probably wouldn't get too upset. There's one that I like. Well, I like them all, but I think you call it warp speed at Canary Wharf. Well, that's what you write here. On the Thames riverboat. So that's a beautifully composed picture, because you've got the roof of the riverboat, and then you've got the base of it, and then you've got the building that's just, the buildings on the on the side of the river, and the water blurring into motion.
Yes, that was. I mean, I took a few of those. That was my 4x5 pinhole camera. I took a couple, one of which I shared yesterday, with my 6x6 one as well. I'd like to say it was careful planning that the top of the tallest tower didn't overlap with the roof of the boat, but I'm afraid it was complete sheer luck.
The more you use your pinhole camera, the luckier you get. But whatever this tall building is, there's two of them, and they're just perfectly fit inside the line of the roof, which is going towards the boat itself. And then then it comes away at the bottom of the boat, where the handrail is. And this tall building fits in that space without overlapping. I think it would be a great shot, even if it did poke up into the roof. But the fact that you've carefully composed it and opened the shutter right at the opportune moment to get the expert composition in is superb.
Thank you. As I say, it was complete luck, but
so you've got the Ondu 4x5 Rise as well. Is that a recent purchase?
Yes, it was a present last year for a significant birthday, shall we say. Mm-hmm. I've not used it a huge amount, but I want to try and get out more with it this summer. Now I feel a bit more confident developing my own film now. So it's, and I certainly couldn't afford to send 4x5 film away to be developed, not without bankrupting myself. So learning to develop it myself was important.
Yeah, absolutely. Expect you had a good teacher.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay, so questions. That's a Marillion song. So favourite places and subjects. So I think we'll answer that, Jimmy. Come back to one of your less sensible questions in a minute. Wendy Chapman. Well, I think you kind of answered this, but maybe you want to expand on it. Wendy Chapman says, what made Helen decide to dive down the lensless rabbit hole?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I think it was just curiosity to start with, really. Exploring more about this, the genre. The more I've got into it, the more I've wanted to explore the different things you can do with pinhole that you can't do with digital.
Yeah, and it helps using the one camera all the time, I think, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I think that's a lesson for us all to, in terms of honing our pinhole visualization skills, yes. All that sort of good stuff, you know. It helps.
It's a bit like, when I'm shooting with prime lenses on my digital camera, most of the time I use two lenses and I know what to expect through that lens from a given point. So just because I've used it so often, so it does help.
Yes. So I commend that to listeners, is to stick with one camera. So that man, I guess it was a man, because camera clubs tend to be male, maybe?
They're about half and half in our one, actually. We're quite well balanced.
That's really good. So long as you're not mansplained by too many people, that's great. So did this guy who turned up, man or woman who turned up and had a session on digital pinhole, was that the first time you'd even been aware that you can make an image through a pinhole camera? Through a pinhole, rather.
I'm sure I was aware of it, but it was just something never even occurred to me to try, really.
Yeah.
So it was good fun. We all sat there sort of making little holes in little pieces of tinfoil and putting them over our camera. Yeah, with a body cap and what have you.
And that's that instant feedback, you know, isn't it? So unless you're going to set up a little mini dark space, which you could do at an event like that, and you're getting instant feedback with that digital to say, well, this is kind of what this is the sort of thing you can work towards, and you can do it by film. Was it a man anyway? Did we decide it was a man?
It was a man on this occasion. And yes.
Did he do film pinhole as well, or did he mention it?
I think he mentioned it, but we certainly didn't cover any of it then. It was just sort of, it was one of those options on a workshop night at the camera club.
Yeah.
And you could sort of give it a try and then see if you wanted to take it further.
Which camera club are you a member of? Are you still active in it?
I am, yes. It's Bishop Stortford Camera Club in Hertfordshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a member for about 8 years now.
Okay. And are there many other film users?
We've got a nice little group of film users, actually. There's probably about 6 or 8 of us that regularly use film. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends in the club, I've actually begun to convert him to pinhole photography. Yep. He's bought himself a Holger pinhole camera and we've been out a few times. So I'm spreading the word.
And have you been asked to do a little demonstration or show some photos?
Yes. During the lockdowns in 2020, we moved all our camera club activities online.
Yep.
And some of us within the club gave talks, and actually I did sort of a half hour talk about pinhole photography and explaining what it was about and sharing some of my images. And I think some of them were quite intrigued by that. And actually over the last year, for most of
some of them were quite intrigued. So you're sort of, were a lot not intrigued, or did you get any sniffy reactions?
No, not at all. But I think yeah, most of them are going, oh, well, that's interesting, but it's not something I would do. But actually, I think I've perhaps educated, shall we say, more of them in the last year, because at most of our camera club competitions this year, I just thought, oh, to hell with it, I'm going to enter pinhole photos in the competitions rather than digital ones.
Okay.
And interesting, not a single judge has commented about lack of critical sharpness, which I was very impressed with.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a long time since I've entered camera club competitions, and I got somewhat dispirited by it all. I used to do quite well, but I became sort of obsessed by, you know, the end result was, the goal became this camera club competition, and it became stressful, you know?
Indeed. Yes. And actually, I've gone through exactly that process myself and come out the other side and just thought, oh, what the heck, I'll enter what I like. And if the judge likes it, fantastic. If he or she doesn't, well, that's fine as well.
So I would imagine you've had some, I mean, there's judges and there's judges. So are there some that just didn't know what they were looking at? Or is there always a note somewhere to say it's a pinhole photograph? Or have you flummoxed any judges in any way?
I've very specifically not given any reference to pinhole photography and the titles of my images. Okay. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think any of the judges have twigged that they're not taken with a lens, which I thought was really interesting. I thought it's a fairly recognisable style, although perhaps it is to us because we're pinhole photographers.
Yeah.
I thought judges would spot it, but none of them seem to have done.
Really? That's really interesting. I suppose, you know, when you look back at, if you shared, just going back to your Instagram account, if you shared one of your church pictures, like the picture of the dodo, for instance, you know, at first glance, I mean, I'm just looking at it on a, you know, Instagram screen, and I can make it a bit bigger. You know, that could have been taken on a lensed camera, you know?
Mm.
Okay, they might have thought that you were using some lens which, you know, didn't have a flat curvature of plane or whatever the technical term is, you know, so because you can clearly see at the edges it's, you know, a little bit of distortion and stuff. So, or they might just thought it was a wide angle and you shot it with, you know, with the lens kind of wide-ish open. But you could imagine somebody thinking that was a lens photograph, couldn't you?
Mm. And I think that's also the fact that I tend to shoot 120 pinhole rather than 35 mil. So of course you get a sharper image to start with, of course. But they don't seem to have spotted it anyway.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. excuse me. I would have thought. Don't they even at the end, if you like win, do they not say to you, "Tell me about how you made the photograph"?
No, they don't tend to, actually. People don't tend to be, we don't seem to be encouraged to go and talk to the judge about what they thought of our images afterwards.
Okay.
I mean, one of them did give me 20 out of 20 for one of my pictures, which I was rather chuffed with.
Which one was that? Can you remember?
It was one I took last December down on the beach at West Wittering, down in Sussex. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a groin leading out to sea.
Yep.
It's sort of below, a bit further down my feed, below the next lot of colour ones, with sort of the groin leading out to sea with the waves breaking around it.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'll hunt that out later. Yeah, that's a classic use of pinhole photography, of course, and can be really effective. So, you know, I'm not surprised a judge would like that. So, Wendy, okay. George Griffin says, "I'm fairly new to pinhole and I'm nervous about using a tripod in the city. I see you have shot a lot around London. How do you go about getting these images, especially with people around?"
It's interesting, actually. I've tended to use a proper tripod when I've gone out shooting in London, rather than just a little tabletop one, or finding other means of support. And touch wood, I haven't had really any problems. I think the thing that really helps is the fact that I've got a wooden box on top of the tripod, rather than something that's obviously a camera.
Mm.
So security guards haven't really bothered me, which has surprised me, but in a positive way.
But you're not going to set it up in the middle of a street outside Selfridges, are you? You know, because people are just going to...
No.
You know, if you wanted a picture of... I mean, I suppose you could. I mean, I like the idea of doing it. Set your tripod up so it covers half the pavement and just watch people part like Moses in the Red Sea and be photographed doing so. But I'm sure you're going to get told off by a policeman or something.
Yes.
Causing an obstruction.
I mean, I suppose a lot of my shooting has been particularly in the city of London, because when I come into London, I come into Liverpool Street, and it has been quieter over the last year or so since COVID. Excuse me. So there's not so many people around. But the other thing I tend to do is I tend to plan my shot and look at the view and figure out how I want to take it. Perhaps have my camera up to my eye and up to my face and just get a sense of the framing. And then I mount it on my tripod and put the tripod up quickly, take the shot and put it down again. So I haven't got I'm not standing there with my tripod legs getting in the way for too long.
Take a, which probably a normal, helps. You know, yeah, I'm surprised you take a normal tripod in. I don't know why I'm surprised, but I suppose I'm just thinking if I'm going into London with a pinhole camera, partly I can't be bothered to cart a tripod around for any kind of camera. Apart from the large format, and I think I'd just... George, what you can do is just put your camera down anywhere, really, you know, and that's part of the fun of it as well, so you don't have to use a tripod.
No.
If it's me, I wouldn't bother, but Helen makes it work really well. Those ones on the boat and things like that, and on the buses, Helen, are you using a full-size tripod for those as well?
Yeah, it's a normal tripod.
Okay.
And I mean, on the boat, I didn't have it up particularly high, so I wasn't taking up a huge amount of space. But I have occasionally used a little sort of travel tabletop sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I just like to have, call me a control freak, if you like. I'd like to be able to get the shot I want rather than going, okay, well, I'd like to take the shot there, but actually I've got to take it from six inches off the ground.
That's a really good point. Having a tripod that gives you a bit more vertical lift. Gives you a bit more opportunity. No, that's a lie. I was going to say I don't have a small, lightweight, normal tripod. I kind of do. I've got one of these cheap China clones. If you go onto Amazon, you can buy a tripod for about 20 quid, 30 quid maybe. And there's multiple versions of them. I'm sure they're all made by factory in China, same one. And it's been fine, you know, and it's pretty lightweight. So I take that sometimes for pinhole photography. What's yours? Is yours a?
I've got the one I use most of the time is the Peak Design travel tripod.
Oh, that sounds sweet. Professional and expensive.
It was a 50th birthday present to myself, should we say? but I have got a little sort of tabletop thing, a little Manfrotto Pixie.
Yes, tripod, I've got one of those. I've got one. I've got the ones. Pixie Plus or whatever, the ones where the legs come a bit longer.
Yes. Yeah.
No, they're good. They're good.
And it's, as you say, if you want to take first steps going out shooting in the city without, the risk of a big tripod, that's, without the hassle of it, that's quite a good way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, especially if there's lots of people around, George.
Yes.
have a travel tripod or something that's not a huge Manfrotto, large format tripod. And just be careful about where you're setting it up. Stand next to it so you're a sort of physical presence. You know, people aren't going to walk into you, so they're probably not going to walk into your tripod, I guess. And, give it a go. Good luck with that. Sorry, Helen, go on.
I think it's just a question of being aware of where you are and who's around you and how much of a barrier you're being to other people, really, as well.
It is, yeah. Well, good luck with that, George. Okay, Jimmy, I take it all back. This is a sensible question. Do you have any funny stories about something that has happened whilst you are out taking pinhole photos, says Jimmy?
I was thinking about this one earlier. Not particularly. The one thing that did tickle me when I've been out in the city is the reactions of security guards when I've been getting my tripod out. I had this the other day when I was standing out. I was out around the back of the the cheese grater. I don't know what its official name is, just off Bishopsgate in the City of London. And I'd got my tripod there with on that occasion with my large format camera on it. And I could see the security guards looking at me going, that's a tripod.
Yeah, he's getting wound that's up. Not, he's getting wound that's up not to challenge, allowed. Isn't he? But you're on public street. You're on a public street, aren't you? I don't really know what the law is on this, but
I think actually I was probably technically on private property at the moment at that point.
Okay.
But you could sort of see the thought process. They sort of look at you and think, that's a tripod. That's not allowed.
Mm.
But that's a wooden box. Is that a camera?
Yeah.
And it just makes me chuckle, the expressions that on their faces as they try to figure out whether they should come and accost me or whether they should just leave me be and not make a fool of themselves.
Yeah, and he's thinking, well, so he's got all sorts of cognitive dissonance going on in his head. Yes. as he sees a tripod being set up. Well, that's normally, there's a box on there. Well, and it's a woman, so... You know, what, really? Am I going to challenge her? Yes. What's she up to? So did this particular guy come over to you?
On this occasion, he didn't. Actually, I was a bit sneaky because I was still sort of mulling over how I was going to take my shot.
Hmm.
So I walked away and sort of changed over my film holder and everything. By the time I'd sort of got it lined up in my mind how I was going to shoot it. And by the time I came back, he'd walked away. So I got away with it. But I did have one chap outside the Gherkin, not far from there, actually,
yep.
Last summer, who did come over and speak to me. And he said, oh, you could go over on the pavement and shoot from over there. And I said, well, it's a very wide angle. I was shooting up through a tree towards the Gherkin, so I got the foliage as well. And I said, it wouldn't work from over there. Explain why. And eventually he said, well, how long will it take you to take the photo? Oh, a couple of seconds? Oh, go on then. So I still got away with it.
Yeah, I mean, really, you'd think that some of these people would just apply a bit of common sense. I mean, so what are they worried about? Are they worried about terrorists? I mean, a lot of it stemmed from terrorism, didn't it? You know, it was 30 years ago, I used to wander into what would now be really sensitive areas and, you know, take pictures of buildings and no one blinked an eyelid, really. But once someone, you know, ran a plane into the Twin Towers and
yes.
so on and so forth, it became an issue. But really, you know, with a wooden box... You know, unless you're being, you could be a really clever terrorist and just you're giving them a sucker punch thing and you've really got a high tech camera hidden inside this box. Maybe that's what they're thinking, you know.
I think also with a lot of these places, like outside the Gherkin, you are technically on private property if you're right beside the building. And I think it's just they've been told tripods aren't allowed on private property. So. Mm-hmm. But he was perfectly nice about it. He was just
good. Well, I'm pleased. So, I'm very impressed with the level of sort of forethought you're giving into this photography. You put many of us to shame. Do you actually do when you're going into London, for example? You know, if you're going in to do some music related things, or if you're just going in for photography, do you do much planning in advance about the location you want to go to? Do you use Street View and look at where the sun's going to be, or is that just far too anal for you?
That's a bit too far for me.
Okay, just checking.
but I mean, I do think about it, and I have some photos that I've had in mind. Mm-hmm. There was one I took, I think it was last September, and I had this image in my mind of the book market under Waterloo Bridge.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I knew I wanted a picture with the books in the foreground and yep. the arch of the bridge and hopefully some people browsing the books and perhaps a little bit of movement in the people looking. I think it was the beginning of September last year. And I walked past there and spoke to one of the stallholders and said, is this okay? Do you mind if I set my tripod up here? And they were fine. And I was really thrilled when the picture came out exactly as I'd hoped it would. There was a chap flicking through one of the books and there's just a bit of movement, as you can see the pages moving. Mm. So certain things like that, I have, you know, sort of pre-visualization in my mind as to what it is I'm hoping for. But of course with Pinhole, you can never be sure you're going to get it until you see the picture.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, thanks for that. All right, so no funny stories, but some quite interesting tales of pinhole adventures, particularly with security guards. If listeners have got their own tales of security guards and buildings, maybe you want to just share those into the Facebook group. So Julien, we've answered that. Oh, another one by Julien. How do you like the Chroma Cube? So I I may have known that you've got one of those, but I can't remember because I forget things. How do you like the Chroma Cube? How long does it take you to shoot a roll with 50 shots?
Yes. Quite a while.
Yeah, too long. That was my response to that.
Yes. Yes, no, I'm enjoying using it. I don't use it. I haven't used it a vast amount, but I've put a couple of films through it so far. But it does take an awfully long while to get through these 52 frames on the whole film.
Drive me to distraction. So have you bought the? Have you jumped in and got the 120 version?
No, I haven't yet. I may do at some point, but I think I've probably got enough pinhole cameras for now.
Yeah, someone like Wendy Chapman would say you can never have enough pinhole cameras. Well, I think you can. I haven't actually got that many 6x6. I've only really got two now since my zero image broke, and I haven't got it fixed yet. And
you've still got a rusty pinhole, have you?
Well, no, it fell out.
Oh.
Someone said, well, it might have been you, or somebody said, well, it's brass, it won't rust. I said, well, it has. I can tell you that it rusted. So whatever it was made of, it rusted. Because when I touched it to see if I could, I thought, oh, I can just scrape off that little bit of whatever that is on there. And as I touched it, it just disintegrated.
Oh, dear.
So now I have a hole about the size of my little finger, which is a bit too big, really, for a pinhole picture.
It is a bit, really, isn't it? You're not going to get an awful lot of detail with that.
No, so I will replace it. But I understand the need to have, you know, because they're all lovely things. And the Chroma Cube, when I first saw it, I thought, wow, that's beautiful. You know, it looks like it should be in the design museum. But, you know, the more you have, the more challenging I think it becomes, because it's hard enough. Pinhole photography is kind of hard enough as well, particularly if you're trying to do some pre-visualization and work out where, you know, what's going to be included in the picture and not. And if you want to be proficient at it, like you're becoming, you know, that you clearly are, you've got one camera pretty much and you're so familiar with it.
Yes. I mean, with the Cube, one of the reasons I bought the Cube was the fact that it's so small and compact. And I thought, well, I can just stick that in my pockets and take it with me when I'm traveling for work. Particularly when I'm, you know, sometimes I'm traveling with big wadges of music, which weigh a ton to start with. But one of the things I found hard with it is the fact that it's got a much narrower field of view than my other pinhole cameras. So I'm still sort of recalibrating my mind and my eye to that camera.
Yeah.
So I probably need to spend a while using that one on its own.
I think that's the only, for me, that's a really good reason to have more than one pinhole camera. I mean, I've got it is different field, different angles of view, and they therefore lend themselves to probably different types of images.
Mm.
You know, and I don't really have that on medium format, but I certainly do with 4x5 with Mike Walker's Titan camera, because he's got these interchangeable cones, as you know.
Ah, right, yes.
And so you can take one cone off and put another one on. I've got two of them. I've got one that's almost a normal focal length, 110 bit wide, and one that's 72, which is quite wide. So yeah, I think having different focal lengths is a really good thing, because then you can take, you know, you can take the sort of images with one that you perhaps wouldn't with the other, and you
gives you a different look, doesn't it? Yes,
it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Julian. Alex, we've answered that one. Jimmy Hickford. Oh yeah, there we go. What, if any, are your? Oh, come on, Jimmy. Are your favourite snacks to take with you on a photography trip?
It would probably have to be some chocolate, I think.
Would it?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Montezuma's giant chocolate buttons. So there's usually a little stash of those in my camera bag.
Oh, I don't think I've ever. I've heard of Montezuma's Revenge, but they don't give you that, do they?
No, very different.
Okay, good. Just checking. I'm not sure I'm familiar with those. Maybe you need to send me some.
Okay.
That's good. So do I? If I'm out with a pinhole camera, I'm going out tomorrow. I'm actually meeting the aforementioned Jimmy tomorrow with Francis Pullin, other fellow workshop attendee Kwasi, and Fred, I can't remember what Fred's surname is. Anyway, we're meeting up, but I'm taking two lensed cameras with me. But I was just thinking, should I just stick the Reality So Subtle in my pocket as well? Because why not? You know, I'm not I'm not taking a tripod though. But
Be rude not to, really, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it probably would. I claim to be a pinhole photographer, and yet I'm going out with two lens cameras.
So, where are you heading off to?
We're going to Cambridge for the day.
All right.
So I've got some photography books that I was given recently, some good darkroom books, and I'm passing those on to Kwasi, and he lives on the way into Cambridge. So I get off the bus and go to his house, drop the books off, and then we both catch the bus again or later on, and then we meet the other guys.
Excellent.
Behind the bus stop next to the table tennis table.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah, there's a couple of table tennis tables in that green behind the bus stop.
That's right.
In Cambridge.
Yes.
So we're meeting there.
Plenty of photographic pinhole opportunities in Cambridge.
Well, Francis Pullen, who's on Twitter, you can look him up and maybe you're following him. I don't think he really does any pinhole photography. He used to lead photographic tours around Cambridge.
So oh,
he's
really?
And so he's taken us to a few places that I wouldn't have otherwise gone to, and different buildings that he's taken us into that I didn't know were sort of accessible to the public, you know. So,
that'd be exciting. The first, I was in Cambridge a couple of weeks ago with a friend, actually, this friend of mine that I'm introducing to pinhole. One of the frustrations at the moment in Cambridge is, of course, all the colleges are still shut to the public, which... means you can't go exploring the
well, I don't know. I was in
various colleges or whatever.
Julie and I were in Cambridge early this year, and we did go into one. I think it's that one. I think it depends on. I don't think they're all closed as a rule. Some days they might be, and some days they might not be. But we certainly went into. Which one is it? It's the one near the shops, near Boots and things, and the Lion Yard place. Opposite there, that one was open.
That one, Corpus Christi, is it?
No. I don't know.
Can't anyway, I know what you mean.
It's beautiful because you go through the Porter's Gate area and you wander in, and you then got this sort of classical square that they often have, you know. And then as you delve deeper into the grounds, you come across these more modern buildings that almost look like more brutalist, you know, 70s stuff. Mm. And there's also that's the one where there's a statue of Darwin as well. So there's all sorts of interesting stuff in that college. And we were in there certainly this year.
Oh, right. Okay.
So when I see Francis, I'll talk to Francis tomorrow and says, wait, Francis, are the colleges open, closed? What's the deal with colleges? Because I can never really work out really which ones you're allowed to go into at any time.
No. Certainly the two or three that we had to look at were closed. But perhaps there are obviously some that are still open, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, where else did you go with your friend on your pinhole lesson?
We went, just had a sort of little wander around the town. We went over, over towards the backs, across the river.
Yeah,
and took some photos on the geometric bridge, mm-hmm. the one that looks like it's curved but made out of straight planks of wood.
Yeah,
and we had some. There were some German students punting along the river at the point, and one of them decided to jump in, which mm-hmm. added a nice element of movement to the pictures.
Yeah, excellent.
So it's good fun.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So moving on, because time is pressing. Alan Holtzman. Oh yeah, because when I shared this. When I put this post in and insulted everybody and said that, quite frankly, you all suck at this, then Alan said, at least you don't suck at making great podcasts. Oh, well, thank you very much, Alan. Yeah, thanks for doing it. You're very welcome. We Corrie and I enjoy it, so I try and pin Corrie down for the next one, which actually we're probably going to be recording next weekend, but it won't be aired for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And then there's me. I says, well, thank you, and I take it all back. Oh, and then George Griffin again leapt in with, did you finish your pinhole zine project? So yeah. tell us about your pinhole zine project.
Yes. My plan at the beginning of the year, I decided I was going to make a zine from some of my pinhole images.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all enthusiastic, chose a sort of short list of images, and I printed them all out in small format so I could sort of shuffle them all around on a table and have a think about the order I was going to include them in.
Yeah.
And that's about as far as it's got so far.
Okay.
life has been busy was an understatement, with the restrictions from COVID being lifted. All the musicians I work with have gone, right, we want to get back to my working life has been very hectic. But I've just given up. I had a part-time job with the National Trust, which I've just given up. So that will free up a little bit more time. So I'm hoping in the next month or two, I'll actually get down to doing a bit more on the zine. And of course, I've taken a load more images since then. So my shortlist will change. But
have you chosen or looked at, I don't know, publishers, not, is it the right word, but, you know, providers of zine? A lot of people use that Mixem.
Yes, I think I'm probably going to use them. I used them end of last year to actually do a new version of a music book that I've written.
Okay.
Which I had originally published with Blurb, but their postage costs were ridiculous, so I thought I'd move it over to Mixem, and they did a really good job. So I will certainly.
I think there's lots of different price points with that service, isn't there? You can choose your paper, and I looked at it and probably thought there was far too many choices for my head to cope with, so I avoided it. I thought, well, do you know what? I'm doing enough things. I can't be bothered with a zine as well.
But yes, certainly. I mean, certainly from my experience of them so far, very easy to do it on, set it up on the website and everything. So
that's good. I've got to go online and do it, and it's just all a bit of a, it's all a bit of a faff. Anyway, we look forward to that, and keep, obviously, once you've got it done, then you will clearly share widely, and Twitter's a great place for advertising your wares, and mostly the community, whatever that is, are very supportive with putting their hands in their pockets, and zines don't tend to be a huge outlay, do they?
No.
And it's a great way of supporting each other. The two most recent ones I have are from Steve, Stig of the Dump Star, which was an... Have you seen that one? What's it called? It's called... Where is it? It's behind me. It's called A Fortunate Man's Place, A Story About a Story. And this is one of the most original, I wasn't going to talk about this on the show, it was one of the original zines that I've seen. So on the back it says, fascinated by John Berger and Jean Moir's original work, A Fortunate Man, a journey was made to visit the place of the original story, where a whole new story arose amid feelings of time, dislocation, and awareness of the forest of Dean, in brackets. A story recorded with a mid-60s camera equipment and a brain to match. Well, Stig took himself off down to the forest of Dean, and he'd got this book, A Fortunate Man, which centred on this village in the forest of Dean back in the 60s and the doctor's surgery. And he revisited a lot of the places and visited the graves of the doctor, I think, and the church and things, and found himself almost stepping out of time. That's how he felt, anyway. And he produced a zine based on, and it's linked to the original, book. And I think he might have a few. He was selling them at cost of about £6 or something. So it's ridiculous. And I think they might be printed by those guys. I don't know who printed Steve's. And the other one I got is Tripping on Trichrome.
Ah, yes, I've got that one as well. Andrew Keedle's.
I've not read that yet. I've read Steve's.
Yes,
got the trichrome thing is a fascinating process, and Andrew been on this podcast, of course.
Yes, and I really enjoyed reading that. As a result of that, I've bought the trichrome adapter thing for my Chroma Cube. Although I haven't got around to using it yet, because the film that's in the cube at the moment is colour film.
Okay.
But at some point, I will go out and have a go at that, because Andrew's inspired me to have a go.
Another rabbit hole that you can jump down. Okay, well, that's really good. So, Helen, we can find you on Instagram, I think, at HHPinhole.
That's right, yeah.
You do have another one, don't you?
I've got two, actually. I've got Helen Hooker Photography.
Right.
And I've got, I think it's Helen Hooker Photo, actually. And I've got an architectural one, Helen Hooker Architecture as well.
Yeah, so all those links, I think, are pretty much there.
If you can get to them by my pinhole one. Yeah.
Yes. And there is a website, which is...
It's helenhookerphotography.co.uk.
So you can see lots of other things there that Helen does, and a blog that like most people's blogs, isn't quite up to date.
Yes.
That's okay. I'm not telling you off. It's just a fact of life. They're really hard to keep doing, aren't they?
Well, I had a blog, which was what I did my photo a day thing on photoblog.com. Mm. Unfortunately, Photoblog has ceased to be.
No, is it?
So I've started one on my own website, but it's life's been a bit hectic, and I've not kept that up to. I've got all the photos ready to go. I just need to sit down and write some text to go with them. So
actually, it's there. January 2022. It's not bad, you know. In fact, I've not looked at this. January 2022. There's a great picture of a, I don't know what it's a Tudor type building. I know that because it's narrow at the base and it goes out at the top, and you've shot it straight on, so you've got the dynamic of the building going either side, and then a couple walking away in the shot as well. Yeah, you don't know.
Was that a pinhole one?
Yeah.
Ah, that was probably in Thaxted.
Yeah, it looks like like that. Yeah. It looks like somewhere Lavender Me-ish or Thaxted-ish or somewhere.
Yes, that was probably when I was last.
Okay, so I commend. So go and check out Helen's website, because it looks like there's more interesting stuff there to poke around in on the blog. Yeah, no, there certainly is, because a lot of the most recent posts are pinhole related, including one with a strategically placed fork at a table. Brilliant. Love it.
Thank you.
And Peterborough Cathedral. Yeah, so go and check that out. We're way over time. So, Helen, have we covered social media sites for people to find you?
I think so. I'm also on Twitter, at Helen Hooker.
Oh, yes, of course.
Well, I'm more of a lurker than a poster there.
Are you? Okay. Right. So thank you very much. It's been hugely enjoyable. And thank you to all those who took the time to post questions to my rude post questions to my rude prompt in the Facebook. I have to confess, I'd had rather too much, nearly two bottles of red wine in the course of yesterday. And I might have shared that question when I was still not quite sober.
Well, it certainly triggered a good response, didn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, I went for a run this morning and I've eaten since then, so I felt a lot better. Helen, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.